You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today's going to be a short show. I had to do some business because I am on the Richland College campus, and I had planned to take during the summer one course because it is highly subsidized because it's free. So I enrolled in a course and subsequently found out I'd already purchased the book for the course. I'm not going to say which course it is because that would be a little bit unfair. But I had purchased the book for the course at a local store, Half Price Books. And if you've ever been there, it's the biggest bookstore I have ever seen. And I've been in many bookstores because I'm a reader and I like books. About once a week or once every 2 weeks, I go to a bookstore and see what's available. And what's nice about Half Price Books is they have sections of the store where they have discounts. And I mean really deep discounts where I usually could get, for example, a $25 or even a $50. In one case, I think I got a $125 book for the great price of $1. Now, what that means is you have to really go in regularly because you got to be there. And if you see a book you want, you better pick it up because someone else is going to pick it up at that price. Now, I'm telling you this because what I did, knowing that I was going to enroll in two courses during the summer, both of them for free, that I would need to buy a book. So I planned ahead and bought the book for the first course. And for those that haven't been to college lately, let me tell you the challenges that students face. One is simply the cost of the tuition. Tuition has skyrocketed. It actually is worse than the cost of medical insurance or medical care in terms of inflation. And one of the reasons, because the government interferes in that market. And because of that, students are challenged to pay the tuition as well as for the books. Now, for those that haven't been to college, and many of you haven't been, or if you were, let's say you're out of college 20, 30, 40 years, you will get sticker price when you go to a college bookstore today. And I usually do not go to the college bookstore because I usually get the books for the class used, and usually at Half Price Books, usually for either a dollar, sometimes $3, and at the absolutely worst case, half the price of the book. But usually it's about 40%, even though they call themselves Half Price Books. Now, they're not a sponsor of this show, but I do a lot of business with them and really like it because I save a lot of money that way. Because, for example, and I'm using this course as an example, I bought the used book for $1. It was the current edition. It was in fair condition. It wasn't in mint condition, but I was interested in the knowledge. And I had an earlier edition of the same course, the second edition, that's in much better condition, that I also bought for $1. So I wasn't out money, and I was really interested in the content of the course. For me, this was going to be a review. I already knew the material, but I really hadn't had a course in it in many, many, many years, even though I'm very knowledgeable about the subject. You might guess what it is. But because of that, I thought, well, this is a terrific way, you know, for course is free, the book is $1, I'm set. Well, as they say, the best laid plans of man can be and will be upset. And this was upset. And here's what's so you need to understand two things. College book prices are not the way they were when you went to school. They're certainly not anywhere close to the prices that I paid when I went to school. And I was on scholarship, and the books were expensive then. But they're in the more order of magnitude of, I would say, at least 5 to maybe 10 times more expensive. Now, as an economist, I know that you have had inflation. That's one of the problems. And because of inflation, the dollar value, your purchasing power has gone down, down, and down, which means the prices have gone up, up, and up. You see that in cars. For example, just to put in a little context, my very first car was a Buick Regal, and I believe I bought it in, I know I bought it in 1973, and the total cost for that Buick Regal, it was a two-door. That was my first mistake. The second mistake was the color, but won't get into that. It was $3,300. That number sticks in my mind, and I financed it through the credit union because I was in the Air Force at the time, and it was my first car that I actually owned. Second car I bought in 1986. It was a Mercury Sable. I don't know the exact price, but it was around $18,000. So from 1973 to 1987, the car I was buying was roughly almost six times more expensive, a little over 5.8. So that's a big jump. Today, I'm leasing a car, the first time I've leased a car, and I might be either leasing or buying a car after this lease runs out. That's very much up in the air. But the car I want, which is very comparable to those prior two cars, I like a mid-size four-door sedan. That's what I'm looking for. And I like leather. I have a certain color I want, but I want leather interior with gray interior with the screens on the windows. The green glass, because I'm in Texas, it gets very hot, and green glass, believe it or not, does keep your car cooler. So that is roughly somewhere, depending on which model I get, it's going to be somewhere between $25,000 and about $28,000, closer to $28,000. Again, it depends on the option. So you can see from 1973 to 2015, and I think all three cars are comparable, although they obviously have improved. I'd be the first one to say there's been a lot of technological improvements because we have a lot of your car today is run by computers, so it's a much improved car, but the price of that car has gone up by a factor of approximately 9, and that's inflation, folks. And that is caused by your Federal Reserve, your central bank, inflating the money supply. And when it does that, it depreciates the value of the dollar, which means the money you have in your wallet buys less, less, and less. And housewives know this when they go shopping. I do my own shopping, as well as when you go shopping for a big sticker item such as a car or a house. What I'm saying is common sense. Now let's talk about books. When I was going to school, a textbook, I'm dating myself here, was in the neighborhood of $25, maybe $30. Not anymore, folks. Not anymore. For most courses, a comparable book today would be $150 to $250. You're going to pay a lot more, for example, for science books. But even in the social sciences, for a complete textbook today, it's definitely going to be over $100. Now, there are some instructors who are trying to keep the cost down by writing their own books, but it's, to be perfectly honest, it's not equivalent at all to a well-written, researched, and backed textbooks, at least not the textbooks I remember. Many, and I would say most of the books today are soft covered. Most of the books when I was going to school were hardcover books. And they were heavy because I had to lug them around. So there's that change. The other change is you can get books that are not even bound. They're just pages with holes in them that you put in a loose leaf book. And that's in an effort to try to keep the cost down. I have no problem with that. But where, so the students are faced with not only higher tuition, but they're also faced with the challenges of buying books. Now, for many courses in the past, you could buy used books. And for many courses today, you can still do that. But what are some instructors, as well as some publishers, and I would say most publishers are doing? Let me tell you the racket. And I have no problems with people making a living, but they know they have the students more or less. The students have nowhere to go. And what am I talking about? And this is what's new, especially if you haven't been to college recently. Most of the courses that I'm taking are online. And because they're online, you usually, most universities use a software package called Blackboard, where it's set up, you can have discussion groups that take the place of discussions in classrooms. And also you have tests that you can take online, and you usually can take them once or twice. Exercises, practices. They have animation, and they also have a somewhat condensed version of the textbook. Now, some of them don't let you print the textbook, which that really makes me mad. If there's one thing that really makes me mad, is you pay money for access. It's called the access code, and students know what I'm talking about. And it varies in price from anywhere from $50 to $100 on up. It depends on the course, and it depends how much the publisher wants to sock it to the students. Now, what's going on here? And let me tell you the difference between education. When I was going to school, undergraduate and graduate, the quizzes and the test consist of writing essays. Obviously, if it's a quiz, it's a short essay, a paragraph or two, answering a question or two. And the examinations, midterms, and finals were essays. Not anymore, folks. Today, it's multiple choice. True, false, multiple choice, matching, and maybe, if it's a really hard test, fill in the blank. No more essays. Now, why? Grading is a lot easier and can be done by computer if it's multiple choice or true or false. That can all be automated. I know I've written programs, not anymore, but I've written programs that you can do a course on. And what it does, it scrambles the questions, it scrambles the answer. So it's, in essence, virtually impossible to cheat, because if you're sitting next to someone and try to cheat, you're going to quickly find that question 18 is totally different from the next guy's question 18, as well as the answers are different. So that's what's new in the area of higher education, is a lot of this, and it's going to get worse, folks. Now, they think this is a great improvement. So students have to pay extra for a web access code. Now, is this for every course? No, it's not. Many of the instructors know that students are strapped for cash. Many of them have to borrow money to even attend a community college, which is the cheapest way to go. And quite frankly, I think well worth the money if you're in a situation where you're financially pressed. And I was in that situation. I couldn't have gone to college if it weren't for scholarships and loans. It's that simple. And that's probably most students today. And if you want to go to the very best colleges, unless you're very wealthy, that's going to run you some big money. And that's why today many students are graduating with anywhere from $25,000 to $150,000 on up of loans. And most of those loans are, first of all, for tuition. And the more prestigious the college, the more difficult the college is to get in, such as your Ivy League colleges, you're going to pay the price. Now, the majority of students that go there are on some form of scholarship, but that usually does not pay all the bills. You might get, if you're lucky, you'll get your tuition waived. In other words, you're on scholarship. Now, obviously, if you're on scholarship, you're going to have to maintain a certain grade point average. So what I'm saying is nothing new. That hasn't changed. I was on scholarship, had to maintain a certain average, and I also had to take, at that time, was called a national defense loan, that over the years I paid off. So it worked out well for me. Today, I would not go into debt at all. I really resist debt in any form. Won't have credit cards, and I really don't even like leasing a car and going into debt to own one, even though that makes more sense to me. Now, I'm leading up to something. Some of the instructors, whether you're taking the course where they're lectures or you're taking it strictly online, universities today have systems in place, and they use that Blackboard, and that enables them to, and there's no extra charge. Now, obviously, the university has to pay for that. It's software. But you can do quizzes, you can do tests, you can do discussions online. You're going to have to type. And you could do essays and submit them. I know this because I have taken several online courses where there was no additional charge. And I knew that going in because I researched what the instructor was saying. What was the textbook? Because normally what I would do is shop around. I didn't jump to Amazon. Now, nothing wrong with Amazon. I have bought in the past, not anymore, textbooks from Amazon, usually used, but now I tend to plan ahead and go to Half Price Books because usually I can find that textbook. It might be the previous edition, but get it at maybe not for $1 or $3, but get it for $15, maybe even $30. And that's where I tend to draw the line. But I was just looking, and I didn't catch the exact price, but it was hefty. I had just finished both physical geology and historical geology here. And I went to Half-Price Books, and I got a better book than the text that they were using and used that. And the instructor agreed, but she has no choice in the matter. She didn't use the web really at all. I'm glad she didn't use the web. But she insisted you have to get the textbook, but she says, I don't matter. It made no difference to her whether I could use any book. And she even, maybe I shouldn't say this, loaned me an old edition. I had an older edition, and she noticed it and said, listen, I don't have the current edition, but I do have an earlier edition. Would you like to? And she did this with a couple of students. I said, okay, I'd be more than happy to do that. Because she knows money is tight for students. So I was in the bookstore, and I was kind of curious what the price of the current edition is. Now, last semester, was about $145. The book I got was for $15. An older edition of the same book for the course, which was not as good a textbook, because I read both of them, I think I got for $20. So for a price of about $35, I saved a lot of money versus $145. I went in the bookstore today. I think it's up to about $185. I could be wrong. I didn't zero in on it, but I noticed it jumped. I go, wow. And that's for one course. Now, admittedly, this textbook can be used for both physical geology and historical geology. That's why they picked this textbook. Not because it's the best textbook, because it will save the students money. They are better physical geology textbooks, and there are few historical geology textbooks. I'm using that simply as an example. I'm not getting bogged down, but I want you to put in some context. So the students are challenged, first of all, because most of these courses, especially science courses that are required, that's where the big bucks are. And admittedly, some of these textbooks will be used both in part one or part two. In other words, for two semesters. Some aren't, though. A typical science book, you're starting at $150 on up to $250 to maybe even $300. And the students have no choices. Yeah, they can try to go online and get it used, and they can try to get an earlier edition, but that's the extent of their alternatives, and it may work and it may not work. You don't know. So that's the bigger problem. But now, and I think increasingly will become a problem, is the fact that what some instructors are doing, especially if they've written the textbook for the course, is insist that the content for the course, and I'm talking about, for example, PowerPoint slides, practice exercises, animation, as well as the tests, the quizzes. I call them examinations, whether they're a quiz, a short quiz, and the exercises, the review exercises to see if you know that, as well as the midterm, the final, and in any essays, you got to get an access code, and that means shelling out money. I'll give you an example. Again, I'm trying to stay away from the course, but you could probably guess what it is. So I was going to take it online, both number one and number two. Let's call it that. It's a principles course for one and two. And remember, I already have the books for $1 each that I got at Half Price. Well, I could buy a brand new mint condition, never been used, same book, never been used. And this is rather cheap, given what textbooks go for about $75. I'm going to round it up. I intentionally don't want to get into what the course was and who the instructor was. So I'm rounding here. For $75, I could get the textbook. However, since I already have the textbook, I have a choice. What do you think the choice is? I could just get the access code. Now, I need to be fair here. In some courses, you need to buy the textbook and you need to get the access code, and they're bundled. In other words, you have no choice. Now, if I bought that $75 textbook, there's an access code in the book. that I can use to access the website, which you absolutely must do because that is where all the course content is. It's not on Blackboard. It's not on eCampus. It's on a separate website, totally separate from the university. Now, this is not uncommon. I want to emphasize this, but it's very frustrating, and many students and many people go through this, and they feel they've been ripped off. I know the feeling. Now, I had a decision to make, and I thought about it. I said, well, let's not make a snap decision. I'm sort of one that looks at the various angles, the alternatives. What am I trying to accomplish? How much time it's going to take? How much money it's going to take? What's the most efficient way? I'm sort of thorough. I'm a worrier. I'm a planner. I don't like to make snap decisions. I like to make informed decisions. So I said, okay, the course is free. It's not free for all the other students. I forget what the tuition is. I think it's like it's a 3-credit course for, I think it's $177. No, that's not $170 per credit. It's for the whole course. Remember, this is a community college. That same course at a local university, a so-called senior university, would run you $1,500. In other words, not quite 10 times the cost if you took it at a community college. You can't beat that in terms of the difference. And both the community college knows that, and so does the senior university. And that's why both of them have increases in tuition, including the community college. Community colleges are a bargain. And like I said, let's say you're a very smart student. You apply yourself. However, your parents are simply not in a position to provide you anything. In other words, you're poor, you're low income. Definitely go to a community college for the first 2 years. Get as many credits as you can. Now, what are you sacrificing? At some point, you're going to have to transfer to a senior university and come in as a junior or senior. So you haven't made contacts in your freshman or junior year. And networking is important when you're going to college. Now, in the long run, because I've moved around a lot, it really has not helped me that much. I would say, I'm not saying none, just a little bit. Because I've totally lost contact with the people I've been to school with because I no longer live, whether it's in New York, Dayton, Ohio, Berkeley, California, or Fort Worth, Texas. I don't go to those schools anymore because I'm not in the neighborhood. But one thing you need to factor in and be aware of, there's a trade-off here, that one of the reasons to go to any university is the opportunity to network with people that you will be running into in your future. And where you have a common link, namely the university, it helps you out. And that's a factor you should be considering should you decide to go to college. By far, going to a community college is the way to go for the first 2 years, as far as I'm concerned. It's a bargain. And I've been to name colleges, and let me tell you, there's not much difference in the courses. It's the same textbooks usually, the same material, and I'm trying to be fair here. It's more or less the same competency level of the instructors. Now, obviously, if you go to a big name college and a big name professor, the guy that's the star of the field is teaching the course, you might get a better experience. You might, because I've taken courses where the professor is the star in the field, and I'm not even getting close to giving you any details, but it was a big disappointment. Because you need to understand, when you're going to what I would call senior universities, especially the better ones, the Ivy League, but there's the top 20 to 30, the way their professors are recruited and retained is simply not on their ability to teach, not at all. It's very much publish or perish. And what I'm getting at is you have to do research, and you have to be published in journals, peer-reviewed journals, and that's the way you're going to get tenure. Now, there's a lot of politics involved, but unless you write the papers, you might be the best teacher in the world. It counts for nothing. Nothing. The name of the game is publications. articles, books, but mainly articles. And if you can crack out those papers, get them accepted, in other words, placed in some of the leading journals, whatever the subject matter is, that's the way you advance in your career. And what typically happens, let me explain the for those that, for a lot of you, you probably don't know this, because I've talked to students and the reaction is, no one ever told me this. I said, well, listen, I don't know what your major is, but whatever it is, find out, and now you can Google it and do research on it, find out what are the top 10, 15, maybe 20 universities that specialize and emphasize whatever the subject is. And I said, I know it for my field, which is economics, but I don't know it for what your field is. And I couldn't tell you. I could rattle off the top 10, 15 schools in economics, but I can't rattle off the 5, 10, 15, 20 universities that are so-called elite. Now, why I'm telling you this, let's say you get your 4-year degree and want to pursue either a master's or doctorate in it. In other words, you became passionate and interested about a subject, whatever it is, and you do well in it, and you've impressed your professors, and now you want to pursue it to the next level. And in some fields, you have to have a master's and even a doctorate to even get a job. Not all professions are like that. So you need to be aware, okay, I now have my 4-year degree, I went to a community college, got my associates, now I have my 4-year degree, and I want to get a job. You might find out, and it's rather late in the game if you find out at this point, that for all practical purposes, if you want a decent paying job in the field, you're going to have to get a master's degree. And many fields, a doctorate. That usually means you're going to either be teaching or doing research. If you're not going to do teaching and research, then you probably don't need a master's or a doctorate. So it depends what your career goals are. But here's what I was driving at. You should try to get in the best university, the highest ranking university in that list. Now, you're always going to have preferences. It could be location. And that's the way I approached it. I forget how many exactly. I must have applied to about 6 graduate schools. And at the time, for some reason, I wanted to go to the University of Michigan. And the University of Michigan was fairly high. It was in the top 10, but it wasn't in the top 5. It was probably 7 or 8. So I applied to several and got accepted to Berkeley, University of California at Berkeley. At the time, I believe it was rated 4. I'm pretty sure it was rated 4. In terms of if you look at the top 20, it's 4. Now, those ratings fluctuate every year. They don't really change by a lot, but they do fluctuate. Apartments go up and down, and as they go up and down, the ratings go up and down. But Berkeley's still in the top 10. I think it's tied for 4 or 5 today. But that's just economics. And that's the important point. Whatever your major is, let's say it's chemistry, I could take an educated guess as to some of the top ones, but that's not the point. You need to research it. Apply 4 or 5, 6, as many as you like, and hopefully you'll get in by one of the ones in the top 10. Now, here's what you need to understand. Whether you get your master's degree or PhD, the higher that university is, when you go out in the job market, let's say you want to teach or do research at a university, you're going to drop down. In other words, you'll be lucky, even if you're a star pupil, to get in the top 20. It's rare, I'm not saying impossible, it's rare that the university you're getting your degree from, your graduate degree, is going to hire you. It happens, but that's the exception. And those people tend to be the stars, tend to be. Usually you're going to go down anywhere from 40, 50, 60 spots in terms of the ranking. And it's a competitive market. It is really competitive today. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's competitive. So it's hard today to get a teaching position as an assistant professor at various colleges, because there's a lot of people competing for that from all these universities. And I'm getting a sense there's a glut in certain fields. I don't know that for a fact, but because I haven't researched some that I'm totally unfamiliar with. Now, I'm giving you this background because I think the way you should approach your education is to say, well, what do I want to do to earn a living when I completed my education, my associate degree, I've said this to students, that's just like a progress report. It's like when you finish 2 years of high school, well, that's nice, but you got to finish high school. It's the same thing with college. Okay, you got an associate degree from a community college. You completed 2 years of college. It's better than none, but you need to get your bachelor's degree. Now, for many students, they don't want to teach. I can understand that because initially I wanted to teach economics at a major university. However, I had a military commitment of 4 years that I had to satisfy, which I did. And to make a long story short, a combination of being grad school for over 4 years and then the Air Force for five, I decided to pursue another career. I didn't want to teach anymore. I could, and I think I could be a very, very good teacher. I know I could be a very good teacher, but that no longer was an interest to me. And that's something else you need to factor in. You might find out when, after you've gone through this graduate program, whatever your field is, that it's not for you or you don't want to make a long-range commitment. I've worked with many attorneys, and many attorneys have told me they wish they had never pursued it. And most of them are not practicing. Some of them are practicing attorneys, but many of them are. Yeah, they're attorneys and they have their license, but they're doing jobs where you really don't need a law degree. And that's why many people drop out of law school, or even if they complete it, say, well, this is not. See, the problem is what you're getting exposed to in law school is not what you're going to be using when you're practicing. Now, I'm not going to get into that, but I'm trying to give you some advice here. And for those that have been out of college, the challenges that students are facing today in terms of tuition, and that's requiring more and more loans, and then textbooks, and it's not a small matter. Because the typical load, there was a foreign exchange student, and she's very competent. I believe she's from China. As a matter of fact, I know she's from China. She enrolled in 7 courses, and she told me what she had done. And I said, are you aware what a typical full load is? She says, no. I said, it's 5 courses. And that usually means 15 or 16 credits, maybe 17 if you have courses that have labs. That is considered a full load today at universities. You've enrolled in 7 courses, and she told me the 7 courses, and I believe 4 or 5 of those courses, I'm aware and have taken those courses, and I said to her, and the other thing is, besides taking 7 courses, the 4 or 5 that you're taking are time. It takes a lot of time for these courses. In other words, you learn by doing, and it's not reading, by doing. It means a lot of practicing, and you might be very good and pick it up, but you're learning what you're learning to do is learn about 4 or 5 software applications to accomplish something, whether it's an animation, video, photographs, games. And I said, every one of those courses takes a lot of time to get a good result. It takes time to learn them, and you learn by doing. It's not going to the lecture and hearing the professor. The people do well in these courses, and it's multimedia courses. They spend a lot of time either at home or in the computer lab practicing. And that's just to take you from the beginning level to maybe, if you really apply yourself, to maybe intermediate. It doesn't mean you've mastered it. And what employers are looking for, should you decide to make this a career, is your work, your portfolio. And I said, I would never recommend for any student to take 7 courses. I don't care how smart you are, how much time you have. Don't do it. And remember, her native tongue is Chinese. It's not English. So you have a language problem, too, because she was taking a few courses that were reading. Now she's learned her lesson the hard way and is only taking 5. And that is still the typical workload. There are many students. I was one that would take 6 courses. I take a load of 17 or 18. I don't recommend it. I remember my freshman year, I was very close to flunking out. I did well enough to scrape by, and I did change my major, and that's typical. That's the other thing I would advise students. Don't think you're locked into your major. Take a number of courses to see what interests you, what you're passionate about, what you're curious about. It's normal to switch majors. No one told me that, but I figured it out all by myself, and I switched on a dime because I wasn't doing well in the subject that I thought I wanted to major in. I was smart, but now I was competing with the people that are just as smart and smarter. So don't lock in a major. If I'm going to summarize this show, and I have to shut it down pretty soon. College students today are faced with a lot of challenges. The biggest challenge I see, first of all, is just the cost of an education, a college education today. And it's a four-year commitment. That hasn't changed. Usually, you have to complete somewhere between 125 to 130 credit hours, where most of your courses are 3 credits. And if you're taking science courses, they're 3 credits with 1 hour for a lab. That hasn't changed. What has changed very much is the cost of that education and increasingly the way it's delivered. Yes, you still have lectures if that's the way you want them delivered to you. Yes, there are labs, but increasingly more and more courses are going to be given over the internet. I was talking to some of the instructors in multimedia, and they had some complaints because their hours have been cut severely. They can't work more than 20 hours a week, and they're really policing this, so their hours have been cut, so you're going to hear those complaints. And that's something that needs to be said. This is the dirty little secret of higher education. Most of the instruction, even at your best schools, are done by so-called adjunct professors, part-time instructors. They're also called road instructors. And some of the best instructors I have are these part-time instructors. Why? In many areas, it depends what you're taking. In many areas, they're working in the field they're teaching you on, and they're really doing this, yes, for the money, to earn some money, but because they're passionate about the subject, and they really know the insides and out of it and want to give students the opportunity to have the benefit of their knowledge and expertise. And I can say, and I've taken a lot of courses, by far the best instructors have not been the full-time professors or instructors. It's been the part-time instructors that come from industry. Does that mean they're all like that? No, it does not. I've had some lemons. I have one in mind, and it was the worst instructor I've ever had, and I dropped the course. He was that bad. And I was extremely disappointed because I was passionate about this subject. And he was terrible, terrible, to the point I said, wrong instructor. And that's something I would urge all students to do. Check out your instructors to the best you can by asking around. I just had an insect attack me, because you will get some instructor. And usually it's a grapevine. And I can remember when I was in this program, I would ask students. And one day I said, well, what about Professor so-and-so? Whatever you do, don't take a course from him. And I said, well, why? And they gave me the why. I said, okay, forewarned is forearmed. So I didn't take the course. So that's some advice. Now, one reason I'm giving this show, this is the start of the summer session at Richland College. And the trends are continuing. The tuition has gone up. Prices of books have gone up. And yes, in at least few courses, you're going to bite the bullet if you really want to take the course and have to shell out money for the access code. And that's what they call it. And that is a big complaint. I'm saying a huge complaint of students, because the textbook with the access code in round numbers was about $75. For about $70, when you add tax, I could get the access code. Remember, I'm changing a certain amount of facts here to protect the guilty. So I already had the book, and I've read about half the book. I knew the material because I've been exposed to it, probably could teach the course. And I was really taking it for a quick review, and I'm going to touch on that in a minute if I have time. So I thought about it, because the day before, yesterday evening, I went home. I said, okay, I knew I probably were going to have to buy the access code. So I went through the thought process. I said, okay, if it's $25 or less, I'll shell out the $25. I don't want to do that, but I'll shell out the $25. If it's $50, I'm going to think long and hard. Long and hard. I still probably not going to take the course. If I did, I would take it not during the summer, but in the regular semester. And I'll tell you that, the reason for that, in a minute. Now I told you the price of the access code. With tax, it's about $70. I said, no, I'm not playing the game. I don't really need this course. I could teach it if I wanted to. Thanks, but no thanks. No sale. No sale. I'm perfectly capable of reading the material, preparing my own PowerPoint slides, write essays, and review the material. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. In other words, I don't need the course, and I dropped it. And that was an experience in and of itself that I'm not going to get into, because I quickly had to hustle to get another course because I need to take one course a semester. Fortunately, I found one and got in, even though it's already started. And I learned something just going through the process. But I finally reached the right person. No problem. I told the person the story, the situation. She understood completely. Yes, we can override it and get you in the course, even though it started. And now I know how to do that. Now, I don't normally do that because I had planned to take these two courses. Now, here is another big complaint that you're probably not aware of. And this is something that I get on my soapbox on. When I was going to college, I think I only took a summer course once. I know that for a fact. And I believe I was taking a calculus course. And I did fairly well in it. I don't think I got an A. I think I got a B. But it was a summer course. I just wanted to get that out of the way more than anything else. And normally I would work during the summer. And I'm trying to think. I think I did work, but I fit this in the schedule. It's been too long. But I only took one summer course. I normally, when I was in either... As an undergraduate, I didn't take summer course. Summer was time to work and earn some money for room and board. And that's what I would do. And that's what most students do. However, and this is a trend, and yes, this trend has arrived on the Richland College campus, because at one time, you could take summer courses at Richland College. As a matter of fact, for most of existence, you could do that. And the summer courses, there was one big difference between the fall and the spring semesters about these courses. Usually, and this is true for Richland as well as other senior universities across the country, usually your semester is 16 weeks. 16 weeks where 1 week is for your finals and midterms in terms of time. So you have about 15 weeks of instruction and 1 week of exams, and I'm including the midterm. I got to wrap it up. That's a typical, the length of the course. The new trend is short cram courses during the summer. And what do I mean by that? 5 weeks. 5 weeks. I object to that because you really cannot digest the material. They truly are cram courses, and they go rather rapidly. Some are online, some are lectures. You simply cannot retain the material. And I'll tell you, I've taken them mainly for a review because I already knew the material. But I would never recommend taking a 5-week course. Yes, yet that is popular with students. They're making a mistake, and the reason why the colleges provide it is that's what the demand is. Is that education? I don't think so. You've turned college education into a cram course, and students do it. They're popular courses. Don't do it. If you truly want to learn the subject, it takes time to digest it. Take the 16-week courses. But now it's difficult to find a 16-week summer course. They went from 12 to 10 and now down to 5. There are very, very few 10-week courses. Well, thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.